warmest of greetings to you, and welcome to Happily Ever Teaching, where we help you enthrall your learners in every subject under the sun using the best teaching method known to science, storytelling. To do this, we feature special guest educators who are passionately keen for your children to become amazing and successful human beings. I am storyteller Chip Cahoon, and with me this week is...
Hello, I'm Abby Marison. I am one of the education program managers for Festival Bridge, and I have 10 years under my belt as teaching in a primary school.
Hi, I'm Rob. I'm currently teaching year 4 class in Milton Keynes, but I've worked in every key stage and key stage 2 downwards.
And today we are exploring geography learning outcomes with this week's folktale from Taiwan. You can listen to the story by downloading our sister podcast, Fables and Fairy Tales, or search our website, epictales.co.uk, for No Tigers on the Table. There you'll find a video of me telling the story that you can share with your children. And if you sign up as an Epic Educator, you'll also get a copy as an ebook or paperback, illustrated by the marvellous Mario Coelho, as well as a full audiobook for you to download at any time, and even some tips for telling the story yourself. Right now though, let's conclude our time with Mr. Chen and all of the villagers of Xinkang, and Abby and Rob here, as we explore some geography. Rob, do you want to kick us off with the geography for ages 7 to 11?
Sure. Now, I've worked through all the key stage 2 and teaching the water cycle, which is kind of science but kind of links into geography as well. Yeah. It's a year 5 part that I've taught, so exploring how the water cycle works, what happens at different stages and things like that would lead nicely into floods. Probably not nicely, but it would lead into floods.
Know what you meant, yeah.
And again, in the same way that with the design technology, I would present my class or children with a brief. I'd say, right, we're in the village, there are floods coming. What are we going to do? So you would have to create a map of the village. That's in there for our other regular contributors. You would have to think about your evacuation plans. Where are you going to send people? What are you going to do to secure the buildings? This would probably be upper key stage 2, thinking of it like this. You could add to this investigation by looking at famous floods that have happened, doing the research in it, and what was the cause, what was the effect, what happened afterwards as a result of it, what could the village do to ensure that there were no following floods, could they, what would their river defenses look like, would they go as far as the Thames barrier, or would it just be let's have it a larger pile of sandbags ready for whatever's coming. Do we need to, again, do we need to think about global warming? We mentioned global warming last week. Do we need to prepare and adapt ready for the changing weather conditions? So it's kind of it's practical geography almost. It's looking at looking at the maps of the areas and then applying those skills and get, like making it a problem as well. A fictional problem, but a problem which relates to real life as well.
Definitely. And then in the UK and the US, I think certainly we've had some very real life examples of flooding, and that's quite close to home. So I don't know if it's possible for schools to link up and chat with some schools who've been through that experience and have some sort of exchange where they can talk about what the actual steps taken were, what they're doing to guard against it happening next time.
Yeah, because like you say, it's all very well saying, oh well, the town has built coastal defences or they've bricked the river in, but if it's in a school, then that's a more relatable place for children. What has the school done to protect it? You can then imagine that, again, we're going back to imagination again, what would your school do to does your school need to protect from a flood? The school I'm at currently is at the top of a hill. So the likelihood of not like a mountain, but it's up on a hill. So would it need as much protection from a flood as a school built on a floodplain? Because again, year 5, 6, we're building more houses. We're building them on floodplains. Is this a good idea? Is it not a good idea? what can we, if we do this, what do we need to add to the building design to make sure that they are safe and habitable places?
And coming back to doing things for a purpose, it's really important to test your fire evacuation procedures with young people so that everyone knows what to do. But actually, we don't often talk about it in terms of leaving the building for other reasons than a fire. And there can be other reasons that you need to leave. So giving those kind of real world experiences of, yes, it could be a fire, but it could be all kinds of other dangers, and we need to find the safest way. So when you do your test or your procedure, talking about safe exits and knowing the building and knowing why certain things, why fire doors are shut and why fire extinguishers are where they are. But you can do that with the entire school. It doesn't have to be with Key Stage 2, but talking about how we keep ourselves safe and the measures that we have to keep ourselves safe.
That links quite nicely, I guess, to what we were saying earlier about different beliefs and how some areas have the different beliefs. But if you were, if this podcast reaches Japan, I know that emergency procedures there include earthquake procedure, and you wouldn't leave the school for that.
Right.
Or you might do to get to a higher place, but your procedure is different to go and line up on the playground.
And that takes us back to cultural awareness of how different places are around the world. But it takes us back to our very first session on this series where Rob was talking about respect. If you have respect for the rules and the rules are in place for a reason, but there's a reason why the rules are there. So you can use the story to really have some very real life conversations with the young people about things that are affecting people all around our country. You know, we like you said, Chip, we've had flooding as an issue in this country. So thinking about geography with early years and Key Stage 1.
So it's ages 4 to 7.
Yeah.
For our international listeners.
Yeah. So
thinking of respect again, you see.
Absolutely. Yes. Thank you for that. We call it all kinds of different things. I think they call it kindergarten in America, don't they? Yeah. So I was thinking about our lovely tiger again and thinking about whether the young people have ever met or seen a tiger in real life and where they might have done that. So in this country, it's most likely to have been if they visited a zoo and they might have seen a tiger there. They could learn about the kind of habitat and diet a tiger in that situation would have, because of course they are caged and they are still killers. They are, but what are they fed? And I think we mentioned earlier that a tiger has a starve day and what kind of meat they're given. But then go on from that to explore, well, do tigers in the world live anywhere in the wild? And we know that they do, but young people might not know that if they've seen them in the zoo, and they might not know that they're not kept as pets. Well, I hope they're not kept as pets. There might be places that they are.
If anyone's watched the Netflix Tiger King series, they'll know that there are quite a few places in America where they're kept as pets. I think there was an alarming statistic right at the beginning of that series that there are actually more tigers in captivity in America than there are running wild in India and Asia at the moment.
Philosophical question, whether that's right to do again, you know, keeping pets and what kind of pets is. So yeah, you can lead on from that. But yeah, my question was saying, you know, which continents or countries do tigers live in the wild? What's their typical life? What do they do for leisure? What do they do for play? Mm-hmm. You know, they hunt their food, and what's their life like? But using all of that for geography, for research. But then, of course, most things that children learn are underpinned by the literacy curriculum again. So for their literacy, they need to do report writing. So it's got to be factual, and something like this, where they have to have titles like habitat, diet, where they've got to have learnt about the tiger, but they can actually write a report for their literacy from what they've learned about it. So it links in quite nicely, and they can do some research and link it to home learning as well if you want to.
And would you also look at the historical aspect to that and how it's changed over time? Because there are fewer tigers in the world now than there once were. I mean, certainly if you go to Taiwan now, you will not find a tiger in the wild. There clearly were once upon a time, because stories like this didn't come out from nowhere. People must have known what a tiger was, and now they, but now the only tigers you will find in Taiwan are these little statues on the table. And there was a time when there were tigers in Africa, but now it's just a joke that we get in Monty Python. So,
but I think it's a nice extension activity because you could do that. And then if you've got really more able students, or again, depending on which year group specifically you were doing this activity with, but if you're doing it with year two and you say, you know, as an extension activity, I'd like a paragraph with a subheading on tigers in decline, or, you know, and if you've done the research around it, they can then talk about how certain tigers are in danger of becoming extinct or which countries that's in, and actually form those sentences and that structure in their writing.
Yeah. And maybe lead towards a project to save the tiger, or to have some sort of fundraiser, perhaps a sponsored activity.
Yeah.
Because lots of the activities we've spoken about over the last couple of weeks, some of your DT activities, some of your art activities, they could easily turn into sponsored activities, couldn't they?
Yeah. And you know, as there are, you know, as I said, we started off the whole of this series about respect. But if we're talking about fundraisers, you know, knowing what need there is in the world, whether it's places that have been victims of flooding, people who are starving and don't have food, you know, we talked about that with the tiger. But yes, you could do a fundraiser for an endangered species, but you could also ask the young people, well, that there are all these other people in need, you know, if we're going to do a fundraiser, who could we support? What is there going on in the world? Make it really, really relevant right now. Who's in need and what can we do to help that?
Which would be a very bold and confident and leaderly type thing to do. So absolutely perfect for the Year of the Tiger.
Absolutely.
That's all we have time for today, folks, and indeed this story. Time to say cheerio to Mr. Chen and the tiger and everyone in Xinjiang. If you try out any of these ideas, or if you'd like us to help you teach a topic you are soon to cover with your young learners, please let us know on social media using @teachhappily, or leave us a review on your favourite podcast app. Please also share this podcast with your colleagues and help us start a story-led revolution in classrooms around the world, so children everywhere can learn in a way that's effective, memorable, and enjoyable all at the same time. We'll be back next week to explore the changing seasons with that classic of Greek mythology, The Dance of Persephone. Right now, though, it only remains for us to say cheerio and kung hei fat choy. So, cheerio! And kung hei fat choy!